Yet another beautiful October day along Michigan Avenue, around 70 degrees here in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We are north of the river, but let's jump south of the river, and we'll just keep going down to around 55th Street, I think. Evelyn Shelton is in the studio now, and she is the woman behind Evelyn Loves Food, a restaurant that opened up in May in the Washington Park area. And I think you have a lot of stories to tell. Evelyn, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for having us here. We appreciate it.
A lot of people have dreams of retiring and opening up a bookstore or opening up, you know, whatever. And you retired and then you opened up a restaurant.
I'm not exactly retired, but okay. I did open a restaurant. So I'm preparing for retirement.
Well, I know you're not retired now, but you had another sort of profession and then moved into this.
Well, yeah. Earlier in my career, you know, I worked in healthcare administration and changed careers completely and went into to culinary. But, I've always cooked. I've always catered. You know, so I just made it official when I went to culinary school, graduated in
Kendall, right? You went to Kendall?
I went to Kendall College, best culinary school in Chicago. Probably one of the best and top in the United States. And I went to Kendall for culinary arts, baking and pastry arts, worked in the industry, several different locations, mostly corporate cooking. And I still do right now. I am a chef and a director at another hospital. And I was the executive chef at Northwestern for a couple of years. And so now I have my own restaurant, Evelyn's Food Love Cafe, 5522 South State Street in Chicago.
Open since May?
Open since May.
It's tough to open a restaurant.
It's very tough.
Do you know? Have you made it? No, but you know, really, I mean, you can probably tell. Is it going to? Because it looks like you're got a pretty good buzz going.
It's got a great buzz going. thanks in part to, you know, our great loyal customers and supporters, and you know, even the organization who helped fund us, LISC, you know, has been instrumental in helping us get our name out there.
So LISC finds people who want to open up businesses in neighborhoods that could use a boost, right? Gets them capital.
Absolutely. This LISC, Local Initiative Support Corporation. And they really do live up to that name.
And you're in Washington Park?
We're in West Washington Park.
Tell me about your neighborhood.
The neighborhood is fantastic. And they have been, the residents have been very welcoming. You know, they want nice things in their community. You know, they've had some issues, you know, as have, you know, several, you know, areas on the south side and west sides of Chicago. But, you know, the change won't happen unless we make it happen.
And is that part of why you're there? You want to help make change happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a great community. It has a wonderful history. And, you know, just we want to be a part of the change. And the change is happening.
Are there many restaurants like you around there? Because what I read is that it's fast food pretty much or convenience stores.
Yeah, it's a great deal of fast food restaurants, you know, kind of have made Washington Park their home. And there are a few other, you know, restaurants in the neighborhood, maybe one or two others where you can sit down. But, you know, we're a little bit different. We're a little bit more, you know, unique in that we, you know, preparing fresh food, you know, fresh produce.
There's a farm nearby.
There is a farm nearby. The Perry Street or Perry Avenue Farm is on 57th and Perry, and this is a farm. This is not, you know, a farmer's market.
Right.
This is a space that's on acres, you know, so we've gotten some amazing produce from them and other farmers in the city.
Okay, we were talking off the air about neighborhoods in Washington Park and its history, and I love this because, you know, I'm a farm kid. I grew up in a farm town, lived in the big city of Chicago for a while, and I was amazed by what I drove by and tried to learn about. But so many of us are sort of transient residents that we don't know the history of where we're living.
Right.
I read a novel a couple years ago about a guy who would, I think he lived on the north side, but he would take the L down every night to visit the jazz clubs, and he would head down to around Washington Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there used to be a club directly across the street from where our restaurant is currently, called Club DeLisa.
Yeah.
And there was also, you know, if you were a kid in Chicago and you drove down Expressway near 55th Street, there was always this amazing, you know, aroma of fresh baked bread. You didn't know where it was coming from. It was just always there. You know, so then as you got older, you realized it was coming from the Schultz Bakery. The building still stands on 55th and State Street. So if you Google Club DeLisa and you pull up some of the old photographs, you'll still see the Schultz Bakery building in the background.
Are there people who lived there then who live there now?
Yes, absolutely. Washington Park is such a strong, vibrant, you know, community. And those are the people who, you know, come into the restaurant pretty much on a regular basis. Residents, you know, who remember what that area used to be like, you know, residents who, you know, really long for that area to go back to, you know, some semblance of, you know, what it was like in its heyday. We have a resident who came into the restaurant shortly after we opened, and this was a senior lady who was probably in her late 70s, early 80s. She kind of crept in, yeah, you know, on her walking stick, and, you know, she started talking to Chef Lamar, you know, our sous chef, about, you know, Club DeLisa, and, you know, Count Basie used to play there, and, you know, she just transformed, you know, from this little lady who crept in on a walking stick to, you know, demonstrating, you know, to our sous chef how to do a two-step, you know, so, and, you know, what it was like, and it was just, it's awesome. So it's amazing, you know, to interact with people who know the history of that neighborhood.
All right, so then I'll put an unfair burden on your shoulders. how are you going to measure success? Is it if your restaurant succeeds economically, or do you have your eyes on something bigger that you see the neighborhood come back?
Oh, you know, both, you know, a little bit of both, to some extent. Certainly, you know, we'll be successful if, you know, if we're able to, you know, fill seats and make money. That's certainly a measure of success. We're already successful because we've gotten, you know, such, you know, unprecedented support, you know, from that community, you know, and, you know, there's space to do other things in Washington Park, and we're just, you know, happy to be a part of
it. You brought Wendy Cole in here, too. Is she your best employee?
That even made Wendy laugh.
So Wendy is a chef, right? Wendy, welcome.
Thank you.
What's the best? What's your favorite part?
So I am the breakfast chef, and I come to let Chicagoland area know that Evelyn's Food Love is open for breakfast on Saturday and Sunday from 7:30. We serve breakfast from 7:30 to 10:30. We are in the middle of deciding where we want to land as far as our scheduling.
Right.
We may extend it, open later, but for now, this, you know, this is where we are.
Well, it's great to meet both of you. I wish you great success. Evelyn Shelton, the name of the restaurant is Evelyn's Food Love. Mm-hmm. Where do people find more information?
They can go to our Facebook page, Evelyn's Food Love, on Facebook. You can go to our website, evelynsfoodlove.com. You can check out the LISC website. They have a great article about the restaurant and how you can get a small business loan from them. This is what they do. This is what they live for, helping small businesses and underserved communities do what it is we need to do, which is revitalize these communities,
well,
bring Chicago back.
Best of luck to you. I have a feeling you're going to have great success.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. Roger Chang, the editor, executive editor at CNET Magazine, will be along a little bit later in the program. But right now we say hello to Bill Geiger. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Well, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Nice to be here, sir.
All right. So 30 years ago today, remember what you were doing?
30 years ago today, I was watching the market go down 22% in one day. It was
Black Monday,
1987.
And, right. And so what caused that?
Well, the thing that sped along was program trading, but basically the market had gone up really fast in a really short time, and it started to correct, and it just got out of hand. It sounds a little familiar.
No, I don't want to hear that.
You know, what people forget is that this, we're talking about this before the show, on the Thursday prior to Black Monday, the market started going down, and in 4 days, it lost 31%.
Wow. And so I know that they've put in safeguards, they think, and things like that. But the fact is, you know, it does resonate today because we keep watching the Dow and the stock market go up and up and up and up at 23,000 this week. And even though things might be healthy long term, it's not something that it's not going to last forever.
Steve, we have so many people coming into our office that are, on the one hand, they're happy.
Right.
But on the other hand, they're nervous as could be. You know, if you're getting close to retirement, your late 50s, early 60s, you probably have more money you've ever had in your entire life. And it's a little spooky. You know, if you lost 30% from here, how would that affect your retirement? And that's what people are talking about.
Yeah. In fact, Elise Glink's going to be on the show a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about how people are living longer and longer. So need to be prepared. Sometimes work longer and longer, but just be prepared to fund themselves for a longer period of time.
Think about retirement as 30 years of unemployment.
I want it to be 30 years.
there's no paycheck for 30 years. And one of the big challenges of retirement planning is, there's two big challenges. One is not to have big losses if you're coming up in retirement,
right,
late 50s, early 60s. The other challenge is, how are you going to pay your bills for 20 to 30 years in retirement? How are you going to do that? And that involves developing an income strategy so you know exactly where your dependable, sustainable income is going to come from.
I would imagine it's sad to reach retirement age and not have what you need, but it would be even sadder to have saved what you needed and then lose it just before it's time to use it.
And in 2008, we saw that in spades. We had people coming into our office that had been just ready to retire, and they were down 30, 40%, and they had to continue working, Steve, for a long time. That's kind of our wheelhouse, late 50s, early 60s, helping people retire. And I can't say this strong enough. We're at an all-time high in the market. If you haven't already, this is the time to really start planning. It's the time to get your ducks in a row, make sure you're doing the right things, make sure that you're planning in the right way, and you don't have too much risk, and you know where your income's going to come
from. Well, and that's kind of the point of it. It's not like you're being, predicting the end of the world or doom and gloom.
No.
It's just the cycles of it, and you need to be ready for when the cycle hits.
And nobody knows when that's going to happen.
When is it going to happen, Bill?
Oh, nobody knows. I don't know either.
I know.
So what that means is, use the opportunity now at the top of the market to make your portfolio as bulletproof as you can. Nothing's perfect, but this is not the time to be laying back and not thinking about retirement.
Okay, so someone comes into your office, they sit down, what happens?
The first thing we do is we get to understand who they are, what's important to them. But the second thing that happens is we do a total complete analysis of their portfolio. We use an institutional version of Morningstar, and it allows us to talk really intelligently about how much risk they have, how much potential growth and income they have. As a matter of fact, I know you're going to talk about this in just a moment, so why don't I hand it off to you?
All right, Bill, good to see you again. Thanks for coming by.
Good to see you, sir.
I was going to ask you, though, so most people probably don't know what risk level they're really at, right?
No, not a clue.
So do you think I know what my risk level? Would you say I'm
sitting right across
from
you.
What do you
You're
think?
A little far away for me to swing at,
yeah.
For you to swing at me, but I would say no.
Yeah, that I'm probably a little bit off.
People believe that they have a balanced portfolio, and when we run it through Morningstar, it doesn't quite end up that way.
All right, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
We're sitting in the Allstate Showcase studio on a beautiful Michigan Avenue, great October afternoon. I'm glad you're making part of it. Hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook as well. I've got a public page there. The private page is full. Go to the public page. You get all the same stuff. Roger Chang is on a phone line. He's an executive editor at CNET.com or CNET Magazine. He joins us now. Roger, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
One of the things I'm watching today, and maybe it's the beginning of a long watch, but is what's going on in Washington, D.C. Amy Klobuchar and Mark Warner, a couple of Democrats, and then they were joined by John McCain, are introducing this legislation that would require Facebook and other social media sites to, it sounds like, sort of follow the same election disclosure laws as broadcast radio stations and TV stations when it comes to taking on ads.
Yeah, exactly. This is obviously on the heels of the concerns that Russia may have influenced our presidential election with a bunch of fake ads. There's been a lot of talk about, the role of these companies like Facebook and Google and Twitter and how they can influence or potentially influence voters. So this is, a number of senators who have gotten together to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and so I mean, the I would imagine Facebook argues, look, we're not a publishing house, we're not a news media site, so we shouldn't be facing the same restrictions. But others are making the argument, well, yes, you are. The data shows that people get their news filtered through Facebook, and perhaps they should start to answer a little responsibility. I mean, when people buy political ads on WGN radio, we have to know who they are, where the money comes from, what they're standing for, and things like that. And we have to file that information. Facebook doesn't. I don't know. What's your opinion? It seems to me as if that's not too much to ask.
Yeah, look, I mean, Facebook, just last week, their chief operating officer, Sheryl Sandberg, when asked about this, you know, she kind of denied the idea that Facebook was a media company. I think she got a lot of flack for that. You know, it's the realization that, you know, as you said, like, who doesn't get at least some of their news from their Facebook feed, news feed, right? So, yes, you know, I think this move is at least one potential step that can, you know, help at least offer a bit more oversight into some of these ads and potentially, you know, prevent situations like what happened with the last election.
All right, so then the question is, these guys have sort of been running around free and loose, unfettered and all of that. If we start with that, I mean, are we going to start seeing more regulation when it comes to Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, all of that?
You know, it's hard to say what the future lies, but I mean, it's clear that senators or Congress is looking to do more in terms of regulations.
I'm a big fan of Axios and follow their Mike Allen does a digest every day. And this was his top story today, was the move, the introducing of this legislation. But then toward the end, they quote former Google Ventures CEO Bill Maris. Now, Roger, I don't know him. Should I know who he is?
Not if you don't live in Silicon Valley.
Okay. So they quote him as saying, it wouldn't surprise me if the sun is setting on the golden age of Silicon Valley, and that there might be a move to actually even try to break up companies like Google or Facebook, saying that they are much more powerful than AT&T was when the government broke up AT&T. I haven't heard anything like that, like a breakup. Have you?
No, that's definitely sort of in the realm of speculation. I don't think anyone is looking to break up these companies. They are powerful. I don't know, you know, from a sort of historical perspective, if they are more powerful than the old AT&T. But it's clear that these companies have a lot of influence, have a lot of reach, whether it's through their products or through their search and their internet presence.
You mentioned Sandberg being reluctant to call herself a media company. I mean, if you were to overall, are they sort of starting to see the handwriting on the wall? Are they moving toward being a little bit more cooperative with government, or are they still pretty standoff?
No, I mean, so far their comments have been fairly supportive. They say they stand with lawmakers in their effort to achieve transparency in political advertising. So that at least for now, they're not taking an antagonistical stance. They seem to be supportive of the move, at least at the surface.
You know, here in Chicago, well, maybe in every other city in the country, people are vying for the new Amazon headquarters, the H2Q, I think they're calling it.
H2Q, yep.
Yeah, the deadline was yesterday. What's your, you know, and so we sit here and we think, wow, everything looks great. You can go right here, great schools, great transportation. It must be Chicago. yeah, you laugh. But, you know, what is you as someone watching from sort of the outside, are there front runners? And is Chicago one? Say please, yes.
You know what? Chicago makes a lot of sense geographically, right? It's close to the middle of the country. It's not a far flight for really anyone in America. So geographically, it makes a ton of sense. You know, there was some early word that Boston might be a favorite. Amazon sort of put the kibosh on that and said there are no favorites as of for now. But, you know, it's right now it's just speculation, right? The proposals for the cities are due today. I don't think we'll know for a while what Amazon's actual decision is going to be. But, you know, there have been a couple of cities named. Obviously, Boston was in the mix, Chicago. Philadelphia was mentioned, Atlanta. You know, Austin was another potential candidate. You know, it's whichever city gets picked, obviously, this is going to be a big deal. But, I mean, you also have to look at, from Amazon's perspective, whether or not the city has the right infrastructure, right talent. And so there's a lot of that as well.
Well, it just speaks to Amazon's brilliance in many ways, too, that they've got all of these cities, major cities, sort of bargaining against each other to try to bring the company here.
Yeah, this is really unprecedented. I've never really seen a company go out so publicly and dangle the prospect of a massive new headquarters. And like you said, it is pretty brilliant in terms of getting these cities to go up against each other and offer the best incentives. Because you can imagine they're going to get massive tax breaks from whoever ends up winning this Amazon lottery.
Do you know anybody on the search committee? Because we could use a good word, Roger.
unfortunately, I'm recusing myself from any part of this process.
You say that publicly. We all do that in Chicago. Then you go to work for us. We had Dan Doktroff on the show a few weeks ago. He wrote a book about his time as deputy mayor in New York. He's now the CEO of Sidewalks at Google, the Alphabet company that talks about urban development and the Internet of Things and all of that. And I see Google just made, I don't think it's a similar investment to what Amazon's talking about, but a little similar to place a location, but they're outside the, they're in Toronto, right?
Yeah, so this is a this was a partnership with the Canadian government to kind of create this workspace for Google, or for Alphabet, I guess. And this is really for Google's Canadian headquarters. So it's not like they're relocating or, you know, branching out with a major new Canadian initiative. They are, but they did set aside basically a 12-acre site for Google. So it's sort of a revitalization and urban project, and it's, you know, sort of a good example for what a town or city can do to lure in some business.
A little late for us to go to school on what they did in Toronto, but we'll see what happens. And so again, you're picking Chicago as the choice for Amazon. Is that what you said?
I'm just saying Chicago's a nice choice. I wouldn't pick any favorites at this point.
Give it a shot. All right, Roger Chang, senior editor at CNET.com. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Elise Glink is in the studio. She is the force behind bestmoneymoves.com. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Nice to be here.
Okay, last time we talked, you were involved in a competition. I voted in the Chicago Way as many times as I could.
And thank you for that.
How did you do?
We finished top three out of 150 companies for the next great HR tech company competition.
And this is for Best Money Moves.
This is for Best Money Moves. So we're, as we've talked many, many times before, we're a cloud-based mobile-first app. Employers give it to their employees, help them dial down financial stress, of which there's a lot right now, and better manage their finances.
It's funny you say that there's a lot of financial stress, because here we are, zooming past 23,000. I mean, the Dow's down a little bit today, but it seems as if we should be feeling pretty good.
Well, people who have investments in the stock market probably do feel good, or if they're like somebody I sat next to on the train today who was worryingly looking at their phone and all the red on it today, said, you know, this just doesn't make sense, right? And so I think in some ways the extra high stock market is making people panic too.
Because it's funny, because we know winter is coming.
Yes, in so many ways.
I guess that's coming in a couple of ways. All right. So as far as winter, many of us are entering into the, can I torture this?
Yeah.
The winter of our lives.
You can shovel your way out.
The fact is we're living longer and longer. And the longer we live, the more medical bills we face and the more strain there is on what we save.
So there's like 10,000 people a day who turn 65, and there are record numbers of workers who are actually working past 65. There's now 20% of all seniors over the age of 65 are working. Most of them are working, they tell us, or they told this one study, until the day they die, because they simply can't afford to retire. And there are more people who are entering retirement without even a dime of any sort of retirement savings than ever before.
What's behind that?
You know, it's a couple of different things. It's the fact that the typical wages really haven't moved in 20-something years. You know, the average family of four is still earning about $59,000 a year. But factor in inflation, your purchasing power is less. Social Security, it was just announced, is going to go up 2% in January, which sounds like a huge win, except that it's hardly budged. And meanwhile, right, healthcare costs have skyrocketed and everything else has skyrocketed.
I thought the answer you were going to give me, one of mine, is that the lack of pension anymore. You know,
right,
we used to be able to retire and rely on something like that. Now it's up to us. And if you're not out in front of it early, you're just not going to be ready.
It's true. And it's really been hard for people who were in their 40s and 50s when pensions started to go by the wayside. And now we have a problem, particularly here in the state of Illinois, with unfunded pensions. And then we've got the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation out in D.C. that will guarantee you only to a certain level. And so I think people are right to be worried.
Okay, so we're worried. What do we do about it?
Well, you work until you die. That was the answer
in
the Washington Post today.
No.
It's interesting. The strategies that some people are starting to employ are smart and they're savvy. They do include working part-time or doing different kinds of things, but they also include things like renting out rooms in your house. Thank you, Airbnb, for that. It includes selling your house and moving to a much less expensive place to live. It's changing how you change your lifestyle. So some people are actually giving up sort of a full-time house altogether, and they're buying a camper. And in the Washington Post story this morning, describe traveling around the country for different jobs at different times of the year, and they basically live in a camper or a campsite.
So have we fundamentally changed who we are as far as the end of our lives and working, or Will we return to some sort? I mean, I'm assuming the next generation will be up to speed with 401k and all that, and we'll see what's happening. And this might not be permanent, or is it permanent?
There are jobs that you can have that you can really have a long time. So a kid born today, child born today, has a 50-50 chance of living past 100. So if you retire at 65, that's 35 years you have to think about and plan for. I don't think anybody can save enough money on $54,000 a year to be able to, unless you get super lucky with a share of, like, say, an Apple stock or
right.
something, you really aren't going to be able to retire. And so you have to rethink what your expenses are going to be. You have to rethink how long you're going to live. But you should be able to work into your 70s if we've time-shifted everything and you're in good health and you have a job, not like a coal mining job.
Elise Gling, thanks for coming by today.
Happy to do it.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.